Nobody comes here in the morning to be depressed, and nobody comes here to be more sad than they already are. I hope that we're here to be uplifted together and to think about positive thoughts every once in a while, at least to take a break of the negativity that is all around us. So I'm trying to think for myself, how can you possibly be positive when you have so much negativity going on? When you turn on your phone every morning, and I'll be honest, I'm afraid every morning when I turn on the phone, how many people I'm going to learn about that gave their lives al Kiddush Hashem, that gave their lives for the Jewish people, for all of us, for Am Yisrael, for the land of Eretz Yisrael, for the Jewish people all over the world. And it's something that is very, very painful. Obviously, it's excruciatingly painful for the family members. It's painful, of course, on a different level for those who live in Eretz Yisrael. But it needs to be painful for all of us as well. It needs to be something that we think about. I've been in touch over the last couple of weeks with a woman who unfortunately lost her son about 2 weeks ago on Shabbos in the activities in Gaza. She actually used to live in Cedarhurst. Her name is Jen Erloy. And anyone who has the opportunity should reach out as well. She's an American. Not that Americans should get any more support than Israelis, but maybe some of us find it difficult. There's a language barrier. There's a culture barrier. But when you have, at least when you have an American who grew up in the same communities as many of us, who lived in the same communities, who raised their children here, sent them to the same schools that our children go to, at least that should be something that we should feel very connected to, and something that we should feel we have an opportunity to give some chizuk or to gain some chizuk, whatever it may be. So she left me a message this past Matzai Shabbos, which I was very taken by. She said, to be honest, maybe it's strange that I'm saying this, but she says, my heart is so broken, but my heart is so full at the same time. And she said, seeing the outpouring of love from the Jewish people all over the world and understanding that my son gave his life for a purpose and realizing that we hope it will be a very temporary stage that we won't be seeing our son because we really feel that the Geula is coming and we hope that we'll experience Tchias HaMesim. These are the way real Jews feel. This is the way real Jews believe, that we're going to experience Mashiach and Tchias HaMesim, and we're going to be reunited with all those who we love. And that is the way she feels, and that is the way all of us should feel. A broken heart at the same time as we have a very full heart with all the wonderful things that we see going on all over the world. And it's a very, very conflicting time. I know that I'm wondering what exactly my thoughts are going to be as we are going to celebrate Hanukkah. And when we say celebrate Hanukkah, it's a hard thing to say. What does it mean to be celebrating Hanukkah when this is going on? What are you going to be thinking when you say Hallel every day of Hanukkah? What are you grateful for? Well, of course, all of us have a lot to be grateful for in our lives. At the same time, we have a lot to be very frustrated, very upset about, very distressed about in our lives as well. Unfortunately, there's so much upheaval and there's so much going on in both directions. So Hanukkah is a complicated time right now, the way we experience it. Actually, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz sent an email to the Five Towns Rabbanim last night, which was a forwarded email that was sent to him by Rabbi Yisrael Reisman from Flatbush. Rabbi Reisman is a great Rosh Hashiva, a very chashuv Talmud Chacham. And he sent Rabbi Leibowitz an email and he said, you know, I am not opposed at all to anyone having Hanukkah parties, and I think that that's natural and I think it's normal and I think all of us should have, and it's very nice to get together with our friends. But he said, there needs to be something done this year that makes us understand that this year Hanukkah parties cannot just be like any other. When there are mothers who are worrying whether their sons are going to come home alive, when there are communities that are running into shelters, when there are young men and women who are behind enemy lines, when there are people unfortunately getting killed every day, we can't just have Hanukkah parties and give gifts to our children and have a good time. That's not appropriate. So to cancel Hanukkah parties is also not appropriate, but to have the Hanukkah party as normal also seems a little bit off. So Rabbi Reisman said that he got together with a number of shuls in Flatbush and they decided this Sunday morning, which is usually when everybody has Hanukkah party, sometime on Sunday, at 10 o'clock, all the shuls in Flatbush, or all the ones that he spoke to, are going to be getting together in their own shuls, not all as one, but each shul on their own is going to get together at 10 o'clock to have a Tehillim recital, or they're going to have learning, or something to start off the day, he said, to make us frame what this day is, to make us understand that at least we need to contribute. Before we set off on the day to have wonderful get-togethers and to enjoy our families, we need to frame it in a way that makes us understand the time that we're living in. And he asked if in the five towns we can arrange the same thing, speak to many of the shuls, have people make their Hanukkah parties a little bit later, and every shul will decide what's appropriate for them. Maybe it means from 10 o'clock to 10:15 they'll say Tehillim, maybe it means from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, whatever it is, but something that we should make ourselves understand and appreciate the struggle of the Jewish people, even if here in America we have a different kind of struggle and it's not at all similar to the one that they're facing in Eretz Yisrael, but we all need to feel the sense of urgency and to understand what exactly everyone across the Jewish world is living through at this time. And I thought it was a very simple and beautiful idea, just to give all of us focus, to make us understand. And of course, on Chanukah, we daven Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh. We daven on Chanukah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do miracles for us today, the same way he did miracles for our ancestors back then. When you think about the words in Alanisim, Rabim Biad Me'atim, you ask yourself, is that not the same today? There are millions of Arabs all around us, all around the state of Israel, all around the Jewish people who hate us. They outnumber us in droves, in multitudes, and yet we look forward to the salvation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we look forward to that opportunity when we too will say Al Hanisim Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did miracles then for the Jewish people. He has continued to do miracles for us throughout all the millennia of Jewish history, and we hope and we pray that he will do the very same. But that requires our participation in tefillah. It requires our understanding of how serious a time this is, and for us to really appreciate that although Hanukkah is a time to get together with family and to enjoy all the miracles and the great gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu may have given us in our lives and continues to shower us with, we need to also keep in mind the frame of all that we are doing. And I hope that many of the shuls in our neighborhood will take upon themselves to do something. I don't know if it's shaya for everyone, for whatever reason. It's a little bit late in the schedule to be doing it. But I hope that each family and each person will really take it seriously and understand that when they're together with their families, there's a lot to be thinking about. So we've been singled out. If you haven't noticed before any time in Jewish history, maybe you'll notice it now, we are being held to a double standard. It's not the first time that we've been held to a double standard, but it's something that we are very familiar with, and it's something that has troubled many. And you look in the news and you wonder to yourself, why is it that we are always held to this double standard? And why is it that Jews are being singled out all over the world? And why is it that we are hated everywhere we go? After all, this is the story we just read of Yaakov Avinu, as we're going to see in a few moments. The story of Yaakov Avinu is so instructive for our experience as Jews and everything we're going through today. But I think, just to frame it positively before we get into any of that, we think about it this way. I've been trying to think, many, many younger members of our community are struggling. What exactly should we tell our children? What shouldn't we tell our children? Is it healthy that our children don't know what's going on? And of course, they're probably going to hear in school. Their friends may not have the same filter as we, as parents or grandparents may have. It's not so easy to figure out exactly what should be shared with our children and what not. On the one hand, I feel, well, young children in Israel, it's traumatic, but young children in Israel are living through this horror, are seeing it with their own eyes. Maybe our children should also, I don't know, maybe our children should also be made to grow up a little bit and understand that life is not so simple and the world is a complicated place and the Jewish people are in a difficult time. We don't always have to sugarcoat everything for our children. Once in a while, it's okay to tell our children that life is difficult and they're going to have to struggle along the way. On the other hand, to terrify our children is probably not healthy. So it's very, very difficult to strike the right balance. I've been thinking a lot about how to frame this for my children and what exactly we should be sharing and what we should not be sharing. And something that has given me an opportunity to think positively about all that's going on. Yes, it is true that we have been singled out by the Umos HaOlam. And yes, it is true that there is raging anti-Semitism on college campuses and across this country. And yes, it is true that many, many people in the world hate the Jewish people and do not really feel any sense of caring for their struggle and for their plight. I will say, though, before I get to that, I know I keep saying before, but we'll get to the point at some point. I will say it is heartwarming when you see people in the world who really are compassionate, who really do care. And I think we need to recognize them. And every shul has sent out emails about recognizing the contributions of our elected officials. Some of them do care, some of them may not. I'll tell you, a fascinating story that just happened last week that was so heartwarming to me, but so sad at the same time. There were, I think, about 200 students from YU and Stern College who were sent down to Congress last week. And I had been advocating for that. I thought that it was important that we should get our young leadership involved and allow them to have an opportunity to speak to elected officials. And I was very, very excited that they had been sent to have discussions with many congressmen and many senators. Anyway, along the way, they told me that they had meetings that were set up by AIPAC or NORPAC. I don't know exactly who set them up. But they said that they were walking in the hallway, and at some point, they were stopped by one of the congressmen who they were not scheduled to meet with. And he asked them, "Are you a Jewish group?" And they said, "Yes." So he says, "Can you come into my office? I'd like to speak with you." So a couple of them went into his office, and he told them that he's a devout Christian. He's an avid supporter of Israel. He loves the Jewish people. And after October 7th, he decided to go to Israel to volunteer. And he took along a number of his staff members from Congress to be helpful with him in the volunteer efforts. So the young women asked him, "What exactly were you volunteering with? What did you do?" They thought he was going to say he was volunteering to pick fruits or vegetables or all kinds of different things. So he said, "Well, I decided if I'm going to volunteer, I should really make a difference." So he went for 3 weeks, not just 3 days, he went for 3 weeks to volunteer to help clean up the Nova Music Festival, which is amazing. This is a congressman. And he was there for 3 weeks. And he said that the last day that he was there, he took a duffel bag and he filled it up with artifacts from the festival to bring back to America with him. He comes back to America and he said every time there's a plenary session in Congress, he takes out another one of these artifacts and he brings it into the plenary session and he puts it on the table and people come over, inevitably they come over and ask him, "What is that? Why do you have it here?" And it spurs conversation every day and he's keeping the conversation going and people are being made to understand the experiences that he saw and the experiences that we experienced. And he said to these young women that he encourages them to do the same thing. And he gifted them one of the cups that he brought back from this festival. And he said, "You should be going around and you should be showing people and you should be on college campuses and you should be advocating the same way I am." Okay, so the girls come to me on Thursday and they show me this cup and they're very uncomfortable. And what was nizgala, what was clear as you look at it, is that it is full of blood. As is, I'm sure, all the artifacts that he took home. And the shaila they asked me was, does this need to be buried? And do we need to go back and speak with the congressman and maybe tell him that Jewish law is sensitive to the fact that there's blood on many of the artifacts? It's a sad story, but it's such a heartwarming story. A congressman from Wisconsin who has no reason to support the Jewish people other than the fact that he's just a moral, upstanding human being. And look what he did. And look how much he's advocating. And look what he's prepared to do. And I think we need to recognize the opportunities that we're given to give recognition to people like that and to realize there are some decent people in the world who do care and who are interested. Just on Thursday evening, I was asked to speak with Governor Kathy Hochul. She was in New York City having a very small, intimate dinner with 7 or 8 people. And they wanted someone to discuss the issue of Israel and to give a little bit of perspective and to thank her. So I came and I spoke, and I was very taken by her sincerity and by her perspective of sharing the fact that the reason to go to Israel as she did, and by the way, she went to Israel and en route, in case you don't know, her father passed away very unexpectedly, I believe, and she did not turn around. She stayed there and did volunteer work and came home. And that's courageous, and that's very special. And these are just small examples of people who care. There are people out there in the world who care, but there are many people out there in the world who are not sensitive to the needs of the Jewish people at this time, who really don't care to give the Jewish people the benefit of the doubt, who are out there and singling us out and holding us to a double standard. And the question I've thought to myself is there anything positive to share with my children about all that's happening in our world? Of course, there's a minority of people who actually care and who are sensitive. But for the rest of the world, who's really not, how do we think about this and how do we frame it? So the way I think about it is as follows. The first time that we were singled out happens to be it was not by our enemies. It was by the entity, the person, the God, who loves us more than anyone else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, V'yisem li kedoshim ki kadosh ani Hashem, va'avdi laschem min ha'amim lios li. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I singled you out. You are the Am Segula, you're the Am HaNivchar. So when we're singled out, it's not always in a negative connotation. For me, I've used this as a time to think about and to try to reflect a little bit. What does it mean to be singled out? Not in the negative sense, but what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has singled us out on His own and made us have a different reality than every other nation of the world? We say it in our davening every day. Aleinu l'shabeach la'adon hakol shelo asanu kegoyei ha'aretzos. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu multiple times every day that He singled us out, that He made us different, that He gave us opportunities to live life differently than everyone else. Baruch Hu Elokeinu shebaranu lichvodo v'hivdilanu min ha'tohim atav v'chartanu mikol ha'amim. We say it in Berachas HaTorah every day, asher bachar banu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu es tarasa. We're proud of the fact that we are singled out, that we are different. It's not in the negative connotation. It's something that we are extremely proud of. It's something that is a great positive. So what exactly does that mean? Let's go back to the first time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled us out. Let's think about that for a moment. When was that? That was on the occasion of Kabbalah Satorah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled out the Jewish people and He said, V'yisem li sigula mikol ha'amim. You are going to be a chosen nation. You're going to be different than everyone else. Mikol ha'amim, from all the other nations of the world. The Ribbono Shel Olam said at that moment in Parshas Yisro that He's singling us out and making us have a different kind of story. And we are told, V'atem tiyun li mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. We are supposed to be a mamleches kohanim. We are supposed to be a nation of kohanim. Now I ask you, my first question is, anybody cold? Are we back at that season of year again? What does it mean that we are expected to be mamleches kohanim? My father is not a kohen. My grandfather is not a kohen. Many of us in the room are not from the family of kohanim. So what does it mean that the aspiration of the Jewish people is that we should be a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh? Goy kadosh means you should be holy. That we understand. But what is a mamleches kohanim? When I try to think about what that means, I'm reminded the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, it's a big discussion about exactly what is the role, what is the job of the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. Do they serve as the Shlucha Derachmana? Or do they serve as the Shlucha Didan? What does that mean? What it means is, the Kohanim serve in the Beis HaMikdash, but why are they there? Are they there because they are the ones who are designated to be the messengers, designated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by God Himself, to be the messengers to the people? Or are they designated by the people to be our messengers to God Himself? Let's be realistic. Most Jews have to go out to work. Most Jews have a lot of responsibilities. We don't have the opportunity to sit in the Beis HaMikdash all day and night and just serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. But somebody needs to be there. So the Kohanim are the ones who are singled out to be in the Beis HaMikdash. But who singled them out? Did the Ribbono Shel Olam, did God ask them to be there to serve as His emissaries? Or did we ask them to be there to serve as our emissaries? Doesn't really matter what the answer is, because in either way, it's the same result. What is the essence of the job of a Kohen? The essence of the job of a Kohen is to serve as the bridge between spirituality and the mundane. The job of the Kohen is to serve as the bridge between God Himself and the people. The people on their own don't always have the ability to connect so well. God Himself isn't close enough to all of us that He can connect that well either. And then you have the Kohanim who are somewhere in the middle who have this job of figuring out how to serve as that bridge between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between God Himself and the people. So what does it mean when the aspiration of every Jew is that we should be a mamleches kohanim? I believe what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of all of us to serve as a bridge to the world. for what it means to live life with a higher purpose, with mission, with vision, with understanding, with perspective. That's what it means to be a Mamleches Kohanim. Not everyone in the world has the ability to be focused. Not everyone in the world can see a bigger perspective, can understand the purpose and meaning of life. But that is our job, as the Mamleches Kohanim, to do the same thing that a Kohen does when he serves in the Beis Hamikdash. That's what we all are meant to do. When we look at our society and we see so many people living a meaningless life, so many people living life misdirected, living life without any vision, without any perspective, it is our opportunity to give that perspective and to share it and to show the meaning and value of life as we see it. And that is the great job of why it is that we were singled out as the Am Segula. In fact, there is a well-known phrase that people talk about. The light unto the nations, the Or LaGoyim. You ever thought about it? What does it mean to be the Or LaGoyim? What is our job as the light unto the nations? First of all, this was not something that was coined by the Reform or conservative movements. This was actually the words of Yeshaya HaNavi. Yeshaya HaNavi says that the Jewish people were expected to serve as the Or LaGoyim, as the light unto the nations. So what does that mean? Are we supposed to go out to the world and teach them about the laws of Taharas HaMishpacha, of family purity? No. That's obviously not relevant to them. Are we supposed to share with them an understanding of how special Shabbos is? Of course not. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Akum Sheshavas Chayv Misa. If you have a non-Jew who chooses to observe Shabbos, he's Chayv Misa. So what are we supposed to be sharing? Kashrus? Dietary laws? No. So what does it mean to be the Or LaGoyim? I actually once looked in the psukim themselves, and the truth is I found something that I wasn't expecting to find. I was really looking in the commentaries in Sefer Yeshaya to see, how do they explain this? Much to my embarrassment, I'll say, I don't know the Navi Yeshaya well enough. If you look in the psukim themselves, the next pasuk explains what the aspiration is to be an Or LaGoyim. Says the Navi Yeshaya, what is your job as the Or LaGoyim? What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made you, has put you in a position where you should serve as the light unto the nation? Says the Navi, Lifkoach Einayim Ivros, your job as the Or LaGoyim is to open the eyes of those who are blind. Lahotzi mi mazgir asir, mi beiskela yoshve choshech. There are so many people in the world who are living a dark and meaningless life. They're in jail. They're yoshvim b'choshech, beis kele. That means they're imprisoned in this darkness. There are people who are living life with their eyes closed, who don't have perspective, who don't see, who don't understand that life is a journey, that life is a mission. That's your job as the Or LaGoyim, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the way the Navi Yeshaya describes what our communal aspiration needs to be to understand and appreciate what it means to give purpose, to give mission, to give meaning to other people and to allow them to open their eyes that are blind to the realities that are in front of them. That's our job. So this is not supposed to be depressing. The fact that we're singled out is because there's a job for those who are singled out. It's because there's a responsibility. It's because the Ribono Shel Olam believes in us. It's because he knows that there's something we can share with the world, and that is why we're singled out. That is why he singled us out. And maybe in many of our children's lives, or many of our lives, we have not had the opportunity to think about the fact that we are singled out. We didn't have to think about it. But now we are. And now we're given the opportunity to realize you are different, and there is something unique. And you are living a different kind of life. So why? Use this opportunity positively and ask yourself, why are you being singled out and what is different about you? Ask your children. What does it mean to be a Jew? Just that you have a bunch of laws that you follow? Is that what it means? That's the only difference? Is there a difference in the way you lead your life? In the understanding and perspective that you have of life? And in what you can share with others about the meaning and purpose of their lives. Anti-Semitism is something, as we know, that is not a new problem. Yaakov Avinu engages with the Seresh Aleisa. We spoke a little bit about it last week. And we're told that they fought and they engaged in battle the entire night, Adalos HaShachar, until the morning. At the very end, when Yaakov Avinu is about to leave, so he turns to the Seresh Aleisa and he says, Hagida Nashemecha, maybe you can tell me your name, maybe you can disclose your identity. And the Seresh Aleisa, the Malach, turns to him and he says, Lama Zeh Tishalishmi? Why are you asking my name? Now, it doesn't seem like such an unreasonable question. You just spent an entire evening fighting with someone, engaging in conversation, in battle, whatever it may have been. Why is it so unreasonable for Yaakov to be asking what the name of this person is? Sounds like a fair question. And notice, the response that Yaakov Avinu gets is not, I don't have a name. The response that he gets is not, I'm not allowed to tell you my name. What is the response? Lama zeh tishal shmi? Why are you asking for my name? Perhaps this exchange was really Yaakov Avinu trying to forecast. Yaakov Avinu looking forward and understanding that the same way he had these terrible struggles in his life, he knew that the Jewish people would always face their own adversaries as well. And he turns to the Seresh Aleisa and he asks him, tell me, how do I prepare for this battle? Hagida Nashemecha, what is your essence? How can the Jewish people know where their enemy is going to come from and how to properly fight, how to wage war? And the Seresh Aleisa turns to Yaakov and says, I'm happy to share my identity, but that's really not going to help. Because as you know, this will continue to evolve over time. The enemy of the Jewish people takes on a very different face in many different generations. So sometimes it's Yavan, and sometimes it's Haman. And sometimes it's Hanukkah, and sometimes it's Purim. And sometimes it's Nazism, or Socialism, or Communism. And sometimes it's capitalism, and sometimes it's all different faces. And that is going to continue to evolve throughout history. So it doesn't help if I disclose my identity. You understand that the internal struggle of the Jewish people is always going to be evolving. It's always going to be changing. I think in our generation, there is no one who said it more succinctly than Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And to be honest, I've read many of his books. I love the way he writes. And I love the way he expresses himself. But this paragraph is one which I found in almost every single one of his books, almost verbatim. It's a recurrent theme. He talked a lot about anti-Semitism. He talked a lot about the pride of the Jewish people. And here's how he frames it. To just understand what anti-Semitism is, he says, anti-Semitism is not a unitary phenomenon, a coherent belief or ideology. Jews have been hated because they were rich, and Jews have been hated because they were poor. Jews have been hated because they were capitalist, and Jews have been hated because they were communists. Jews have been hated because they believed in tradition, and Jews have been hated because they were rootless cosmopolitans. Jews have been hated because they kept to themselves, and they have been hated because they penetrated everywhere. Anti-Semitism is not a belief, but rather a virus. The human body has an immensely sophisticated immune system, which develops defenses against viruses. It is penetrated, however, because viruses mutate. And you need to understand that anti-Semitism mutates. That is the story of our people. And that is why Yaakov Avinu was not able to be told how to properly strategize against the Seresh Aleisa, because it was something that was an experience that would continue to mutate over time. It is a virus, not a belief. It is simply a reality, a fact of life. A number of years ago, I was learning a Gemara. When the Gemara gives us a mashal for something, it means you had a hard time understanding it as it is, and therefore we need to give you a mashal, a parable, to help you understand it. So very often when we read Megillas Esther, we have the impression, mistaken impression, that Haman is the one who was genocidal. Haman is the one who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. Ahasuerus, not really, he just sat on the sidelines, didn't really do anything. But the Gemara tells us, no, it's a mistake. Haman and Ahasuerus hated the Jewish people equally. They both had a tremendous venom toward the Jewish people. And they were both equally as involved in this plan, the final solution. Says the Gemara, you want to understand the story of Haman and Ahasuerus, the relationship between the two of them against the Jewish people? Let me give you a mashal. This is the mashal of the Gemara. Mashal lebal hatel ubal hachariz. This can be compared to someone who has a mound and somebody who has a ditch. What are these two individuals? What's their story? So the Gemara tells us the following interesting story. The Gemara tells us that there were two individuals who were next door neighbors, and they meet one day in the supermarket, and they're starting to complain to each other. And they each say to the other, "We have a beautiful piece of land, a beautiful piece of property that is so fertile. The problem is, neither of us can plant on it." Why? So one turns to his friend and he says, "My problem is, I have a huge mound of dirt in the middle of the field, which gets in the way of everything, and because of that, I'm unable to have anything planted in my field because I wouldn't be able to work the field. In order to get rid of this dirt, it's going to cost me so much money to have a company come and remove it, it's almost not worthwhile." The friend turns to him and he says, "It's funny you say that, because I have the opposite problem. I also have a beautiful piece of land and I would love to work the field. The problem is, I have a very deep ditch in the middle of my field, and because of that, I'm unable to work the field. And in order to get someone to come and fill it will cost me so much money, it's simply not worthwhile." This is amazing. And they shake hands and they come up with a plan. "Why don't we figure out how to both help each other and do something that will be mutually beneficial? How about you come every day, take a little bit of dirt, fill up your hole, and over time, your mound of dirt is going to be gone, my hole is going to be filled, and both of us will be happy." And says the Gemara, that is the story of Haman and Ahasuerus. You got it? Does that help you understand? It does. How? It didn't help me understand. I have no idea what the Gemara is trying to share with us. What does it mean? Ahasuerus and Haman, I'm sorry. I know you can handle. So Ahasuerus and Haman, I wouldn't have done that to anyone else. But Ahasuerus and Haman hate the Jewish people, and this can be compared to the Baal HaTel and Baal HaHaritz. How does that help us understand the relationship? Rav Asher Weiss once told me a pshat in the Gemara. I later saw that it is mentioned also in the Chasam Sofer. Actually, not in the Chasam Sofer. Somebody mentions it in the name of the Chasam Sofer. I don't know if he has it himself. But historically, you can be made to understand what this Gemara means. There were different generations when the hatred and animosity toward the Jewish people took on different forms. There were times when the Jewish people were hated because they were considered to be subhuman beings, not worthy of being a part of the human race. 80 years ago in Nazi Germany, that's what they felt. Even dogs, animals, are better than human beings. I'm sorry, better than the Jews. The Jews cannot be considered to be a part of the human race. There's something wrong with them. They're subhuman beings. They're beneath the surface of the ground. That's the Baal HaHaritz. That's the person who hates the Jewish people because they're underneath the belly of society. But there are others who hate the Jewish people because the Jewish people are too powerful. Have you never heard the trope, the Jews run the media and the Jews pay off the politicians? You've heard all of this. We've all heard it. Halavai, we would have enough influence to advocate for ourselves, but we don't. But this is anti-Semitism. Look in the days of Paro. How did he convince his people that the Jewish people need to be destroyed? What did he say? The Jewish people are proliferating, they're becoming so popular, they're becoming so large, they're so powerful and so influential, at some point they're going to take us all over. They're going to destroy our whole community because they're going to become their own nation that is not going to be respectful to any of our policies or any of our leadership. We need to destroy them. Do you know that in the days of the Spanish Inquisition, the Abarbanel, who lived in Spain, the Abarbanel was printed in every Chumash? The Abarbanel was the finance minister in Spain in 1492. Sometimes the Jews were hated because they were too powerful, because they were this big mound that was in the middle of a field that nobody knew how to get rid of. And sometimes the Jews were hated because they were considered to be subhuman beings that weren't worthy of life at all. But the end of the story is those two perspectives shake hands with each other because they all lead to the same place. They all hate the Jewish people equally as much. And all they want is the destruction of the Jewish people and the Jewish spirit. On Hanukkah, we're going to recite Al Anisim, and we're going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the great miracles in our lives. Halavai this year Hanukkah. We should have a lot to be thankful for. Al Anisim ve'al HaTshuos ve'al HaMelchamos she'asisa la'vaseinu bayamim ahem bazman hazeh. Halavai, every parent in Israel should be able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Nisim of saving their children. Halavai, the Jewish people should have a lot of miracles to talk about. But when you think about those words of Al Anisim, so there are many different aspects of the miracle that we're grateful for. Al Anisim v'Al Aniflos. As you break down the miracle, you realize so much happened in the days of the Chashmonaim. So much happens in our lives that we have to be grateful for. Someone just called me as I was running into the shir. I have to write a speech for Hanukkah. Do you have any story of a great miracle of recent history to the Jewish people that I can include? I'm thinking, do I have any story? The story of us being alive is the greatest story of the greatest miracle ever in the history of the world. What more do you need to say? Just take a step back and look at Jewish history and understand we have a lot of Nisim to be grateful for. But the Panavish Rav points out, it's very strange. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Melchamos. We thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for the war. What does that even mean? Who is appreciative that there's a war going on right now? Definitely not any of the soldiers. They're not happy. Again, they're doing their jobs faithfully. But we're a peaceful people. We live lives derachea darchei noam. We would much rather live with shalom. We don't want to be fighting. So who's happy that there's a war? The parents of those chayalim? The grandparents? The brothers and sisters? The country that I read in an article last week in the Wall Street Journal is losing $1 billion a day in their economy? Is that why we're happy for a war? Are we happy for a war because unfortunately Har Herzl continues to fill up with graves? What exactly is there to be grateful for about a war? Why are we thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the great miracles and also for the great war? It's amazing to recount the stories of the war. No one's grateful for war. I was talking to someone last week. He told me he has a few children in the army. And he said recently, he comes home very late at night and he leaves early in the morning. Not because he's at work so late, but he said, I'm terrified when I'm home. Every person that knocks on the door, I think, is maybe a member of the IDF coming to inform me about one of my children. I can't live with this. So he says, it's unfair to my wife that she's home, but she's stronger than I am. I can't be home. I'm terrified. So who is grateful for a melcham? Ask Rav Kahanam in the Pana Vizharav, what do we mean when we say in Al Anisim, Al HaMelchamos? And he explains, of course, when we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the melchama, nobody is happy that there's a war. Nobody is proud of the fact that there are casualties. Of course, casualties on our end is devastating. Casualties on the other side is also not something we're comfortable with. It's not something anyone's happy about. Nobody likes war. So what are we talking about, says Rav Kahaneman? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing us to have the strength and the fortitude for this ongoing commitment to fight the fight of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is to be the moral compass of the world. Is that not what Hitler said about the Jewish people? In Mein Kampf he wrote, "We are the conscience of the world." That's what we are. It's what we're supposed to be. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing us to be the people who stand up with moral clarity, who always have and who always will. And it's exhausting. And it's hard. And it's been a long journey. And many people have given up. They don't want to fight this fight. They don't want to be the ones who are standing up against all the indecent acts of society, against the immorality, the profanity that we see all around us, the depraved conditions of our world as we see it today. But we are the principled, noble people who live upstanding lives and honorable lives, who understand right from wrong, who know how life is supposed to be lived, and we are proud of that melchama. And we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for entrusting us to fight that battle, to be the moral conscience of the world. Every day we say in Berachas HaShachar, two brachos that sound very similar. My father once explained to me, we say Hanosein LaYoyef Koach, which means we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us strength. And we also say a bracha, Ozer Yisrael Begvura, which means we thank Hashem for giving us strength. So why do we have two brachos that mention the same idea? What are we thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for? The same thing? My father once told me, Hanosein LaYoyef Koach means we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for physical strength. We go to sleep at night, and we're grateful that we wake up in the morning and we have the ability to be well rested and to have the ability to be productive, to do things with the strength that we've now had because we slept at night. And we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the morning, Hanosa Nayayif Koach, thank you for giving me physical strength. But beyond that, we also thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us the Gvura, for giving us the stamina and the fortitude to be the Jewish people. It's not easy to be the Jewish people. But we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam every day, Ozer Yisrael Begvura, that He gives us strength, that He gives us the opportunity to stand up with conviction for all that is right in the world. And we're proud of that. But it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of strength. And yes, when we say Al Anisim on Chanukah, we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for the miracles, the overt miracles, the hidden miracles. And we also thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu al hamilchamos for allowing us to have the perspective, for allowing us to be the Ama Nivchar, for allowing us to be the Arla Goyim, to stand up with lifkoach einayim ivros, to open our eyes and to open the eyes of the world, to make them all appreciate that life can be lived with purpose and with meaning, with mission and with conviction. And that is what we are, that is who we are, that is what we represent, and that is what we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for in Al Anisim on Chanukah, and it is so appropriate. I have said this medrash a number of times before, but to me it never gets old, and I love saying it over. A number of years ago, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau was here for Shabbos. It so happened to be that it was the Shabbos of the Tree of Life Synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, which I think was 5 years ago. Am I wrong? I think this is the 5th anniversary. So, Matzei Shabbos, Rabbi Lau was supposed to have a Malava Malka with all the local rabbis and their wives. And he was supposed to speak. I don't know what he was scheduled to speak about, but he came and he was so shaken up. And he basically said that whatever we were going to talk about is irrelevant because I am a Holocaust survivor. I've spent my entire life fighting against this, and I never in a million years imagined I would be in the United States of America, in the land of the free, the home of the brave, and a synagogue would be shot at on Shabbos, and there would be Jewish victims. How can this be? And he decided to share a perspective about what he was feeling. And he's an amazing speaker. He has a gift that I don't have, a lot of them. But one of the gifts that he has is, he spoke about a medrash for 45 minutes. I don't know how to do that. He said one thing for 45 minutes and had everyone totally enraptured in his words. I don't know how. I remember leaving that evening and I turned to my wife and I said, what did he just say? Was that one medrash for 45 minutes? And she said, I have no idea. But it was amazing. It was really, really amazing. And he shared the medrash that all the premeditated murderers throughout Tanakh got together and had a conversation. And they were each looking negatively at the job that the one before them had done and seeing how much they failed in their mission to destroy the Jewish people. So let's see. Says the Medrash, who is the first murderer in the pages of Tanakh?
Cain.
Cain was the first murderer in the history of Tanakh. Now, why did Cain kill his brother? The story that we're told is because he was jealous. Maybe there are a lot of other commentaries, but the simple understanding of the story is you have two brothers who love each other, two brothers who are trying to get the good graces of the Ribono Shel Olam, two brothers who are offering sacrifices, karbanos, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hevel's is accepted, Cain's is not. Cain is jealous of his brother, he goes and he kills him. Okay. Along comes the next murderer in history, and he is none other than Esav HaRasha. And he turns to Cain and he says, Shote Haya Cain, Cain, you're so foolish. You did not really get to the goal that you were intending. Because you murdered your brother, and the problem is your parents are still alive. And if your parents are still alive, that means they can have another child. And if they have another child, it means your competition is back. So what did you gain? And in the end of the day, that's exactly what happened. Adam and Chava have another child. They name him Shase. Why did they name him Shase? Says the Torah, Ki shas li elokim zera acher tachas hevel b'ni. This is to be in the place of Hevel, who was just killed. So your competition is back. So what did you gain? What did you accomplish? Comes Esav and he says, I'm not going to make that mistake. And Esav says, I have a better plan. I hate my brother Yaakov, and he's my competition, and he's the thorn in my side, but Yikruvu Yimei Evel Avi Vaharga Asachi. I'm going to wait until my parents die, and only then will I kill my brother. And that way I will ensure that there will never be a competition again in my life. That was the plan. So where did he go wrong? Yaakov Avinu somehow survives. Along comes Paro and he says, Shota Haya Cain v'shota Haya Esav. They both got it wrong because, after all, the Jewish people are still here. And we have a problem. So Paro's trying to figure out what exactly happened? What went wrong in the story of Cain and in the story of Esav? Comes Paro and he says, here was the problem. Yes, it was a good idea, good calculation to wait along in order that your parents should die. This way there won't be another child in the family. However, what you did not factor into the equation is at that point in history, Yaakov Avinu already got married. He didn't just marry one wife, he married four wives. He didn't just have one child, he had 12 children. At that point, each one of his children also got married and had children of their own. At this point in history, they're too big. You can't get rid of them. So Paro devises a plan. Let's kill them when they're young children. That's the way we'll get rid of the Jewish people. So where did he fail? The Jewish people are still here. Along comes Haman HaRasha. And he says, Cain got it wrong, and Esav got it wrong, but it seems that Paro also got it wrong because the Jewish people are still here. What was their mistake? We told in Megillas Esther, Vidaseyam shonos mikol am, which means the Jewish people follow a different set of laws than everyone else in the world. But perhaps that is referring to one law in particular. How do we determine whether a child is going to be a Jew or not? Well, the rest of the world decides based on the father. We determine that based on the mother. So Paro's plan was really flawed because he decided we're going to kill every male child, but we're safe if the women are saved because they'll intermarry, they'll have children, all those children will be Egyptians, and we'll be fine. But the same shonos nikola. The Jewish people don't believe what you believe. They believe that if a child is born to a Jewish mother, that child will in turn be a Jew. And if so, then the Jewish population continues to survive. Which is why Haman devises a plan, Lahashmid, Laharog, Ula'abed, Eskol HaYehudim. Mina'ar v'ad zaken, taf v'nashim b'yom echad. We're going to kill men, women, and children all on one day, the final solution. This way, we will rid the world of the Jewish problem. So where was he wrong? We are still here. How can it be? With all the calculations of Cain and Esav and Paro and Haman, how are the Jewish people still here? And the answer, says the Medrash, is we come to the end of days and we get to Melchemes Gog Umagog, which is known to be the last fight before the coming of Mashiach. And what happens at Melchemes Gog Umagog? They all look back at all those premeditated murderers in history and they realize something didn't work. So we have to devise a plan that will work to finally destroy the Jewish people. See, here's the flaw in the argument, they say. As long as the Jewish people have Avihem Shabashamayim, as long as the Jewish people are connected to their Father in heaven, he won't allow for them to be destroyed. So here's the plan. Let us figure out how to cut the relationship, cut the cord between God and the Jewish people. And maybe then we'll be successful to destroy the Jewish people. If you look in the second parak of Tehillim, this is actually what's being described. Ninatka es mosroseimo v'nashlicha mimenu avoseimo. We are told that the umos ha'olam by melchemes Gog Umagog, our enemies are going to join together and they have one goal in mind. And what is that goal? To cut our cord. Nashlicha mimenu avoseimo. We have a cable that binds us with the Ribono Shel Olam. And their objective is to destroy that, to cut that cable, to break the bonds between ourselves and the Ribono Shel Olam. What does the very next pasuk in Tehillim say? Yoshe b'shamayim yisfak Hashem yilag lamo. At that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's a nice plan, but it will never happen. Hilo yitosh Hashem amo v'nachalaso lo yazov. Our connection with the Ribono Shel Olam will never be broken. Along the way, are there going to be people who break their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yes. But as the Jewish people, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker, there will never be a time when the Jewish people will have their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu severed, when they will have their relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam broken. And I think perhaps, if we think about it, perhaps what this means for us is that the challenge that we face is that challenge of Melchemes Gog Umagog. Of course, there's a physical threat to the Jewish people, as there always has been whenever our enemies rise up against us. But there is also a challenge of Melchemes Gog Umagog, who are trying and attempting to break our bond and connection and relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so many people are having shaky emunah today. And so many people are having questions on the Ribono Shel Olam. Rightfully so, it's hard. But that is the challenge. That is exactly what the challenge is all about. When we talk about Chevlei Mashiach, what exactly does Chevlei Mashiach mean? So the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin that we have an understanding, we have a belief that there's going to be, like we refer to a woman who's in labor as Chevlei Leida, the terrible pain that she has as she's birthing her child. That is where we have this borrowed term of Chevlei Mashiach. There's going to be something very painful before the times of the coming of Mashiach. Something that is going to be so overwhelming to all of us, to the point that the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin, a number of Amoraim said to each other, Yese v'lo achmine, which means, I hope that Mashiach will come and I pray for his coming every day, but I don't want to be there when he comes, because I'm terrified of that reality. Chevlei Mashiach is something that scared the Amoraim. But the Noam Elimelech writes, Chevlei Mashiach also means something else. Chevel in Hebrew means a cable, a rope. And he says, Chevli Mashiach means, before the coming of Mashiach, we are all going to be hanging on to the Ribono Shel Olam by this cable, by this rope. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take that cable and he's going to ferociously blow it in the wind. And lots of people are going to fall off. And their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no longer going to be strong. And the challenge of Chevli Mashiach is, who can hold on to that chevel? Who can hold on to the rope when things are very complicated, when things are very hard, when things are very difficult to process? That's Chevli Mashiach, says the Noam Elimelech. That's what it means. And that's what we are all being challenged with. Of course, there's a physical threat, but there's so much more than that. Do we stand up proudly this Hanukkah and say, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the miracles in my life, for the miracles that have come to the Jewish people over the many, many millennia of Jewish history? But am I prepared to say this Hanukkah that I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu also for entrusting me to fight the milchama, to fight the ongoing fight of the Jewish people, to be an upstanding human being, to be the kind of person who others in the world can look up to and can understand that I live life with purpose and with mission and with clarity and with understanding of what I'm supposed to be doing and what perhaps I'm not? Am I prepared to stand up this Hanukkah and say that this is something that, of course, it's a challenge for me in my life? I am a human being. I struggle and I fail every once in a while, just like everyone else. But on the whole, I'm proud that I've been given this opportunity to stand and fight Milchamas Hashem. To stand and fight, not only physically, but in every other way, to fight against the immorality, the depravity, and the terrible inconsistency of our world around us. That is something that Rav Kahaneman writes, we have to be grateful for, but we have to mean it. And we say it every day, don't wait for Hanukkah. Tomorrow morning, or this morning if you didn't daven yet, when you say brachos, and you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving you strength, you thank him, Hanosem Ayav Koach, for giving you physical strength. And you thank him, Ozer Yisrael Begvura, for giving you the fortitude, for giving you the wherewithal to continue to stand strong with everything that the Jewish people represent and have represented. We have a long, rich legacy, a long history that we can be proud of. Let me just close with a mashal of the Dumna Magid, only because I love it. I know it's overtime, but I love this mashal, and with that we really will close. He writes that there was a simple man from a small town who didn't really ever get out into the world. And he has a number of friends who went on a business trip. Now they come back and they tell him, you've got to go visit this town. You're not going to believe what you see there. In this town, we saw something that was so amazing. We saw a box that is able to move without horses pulling it. It's what we refer to today as a train. The man says, what are you talking about? How can that be? So who's moving it? You got to go see it for yourself. Saves up money for a half a year. Tells his family, I'm going on a trip. I'm sorry. There's something I need to see. Goes to this big town. He asks somebody, do you know where they have these big boxes with wheels on the bottom that move without horses? People look at him like he's crazy. Can't figure out what he means. Finally, someone says, oh, you mean the subway? You mean the train? Yeah, you go over there. There's the station. You'll see it. Comes to the station. He looks around. He sees a hustle and bustle. So many people running around. He doesn't know where to go. Somebody tells him, if you need help, you go to the counter over there. They'll show you where to go. Comes to the counter. Speaks to the clerk. And he says, I'd like to take the train. Okay, where would you like to go? I don't know. What are the options? Well, you can go anywhere. They're having a very awkward conversation. Finally, the clerk says to him, well, tell me, what kind of ticket would you like to buy? He says, well, what kind of tickets do they have? He says, well, there's first class, and then there's business class, and then there's economy, premium economy, all different things. And then there's the cargo in the back. He says, well, I really don't know. I'm not familiar with this whole setup. I don't know what this is. Okay, so take out your wallet. Maybe show me how much money do you have. Then I'll figure out what kind of ticket you want to buy. Takes out his wallet. He has a lot of money. He's been saving up for 6 months. Okay, I guess you want a first class ticket. Here, gives him a ticket. You go wait on the station over there, on the platform. The train is going to come in a few minutes, and you'll get on with everyone else. Goes to the station. He's very excited. Sees everyone's waiting, a big commotion. Finally, the train comes. Everyone rushes on. And he goes on together with everyone else. Nobody told him that he has to hold on or he has to sit down somewhere because he's going to fall down. Train starts moving. He falls down. Everyone's laughing at him. He thinks it's part of the chavaya. Everyone's having a great time. He's looking around. He's taking it all in. It's amazing. Suddenly, somebody screams from the front of the train, "Quick! The ticketmaster is coming around. Everybody hide!" So he thinks this is part of the experience. Great! And he notices everyone's hiding under the seats, behind the chairs, putting suitcases on top of themselves. So he does the same thing. He goes to the back of the train, puts a couple of suitcases on top of himself, and he's waiting. And everyone's silent. And suddenly the conductor comes around and he starts looking around. There's nobody there. Problem was, this man was taller than most other people. So his legs were sticking out the end and he couldn't cover himself with the suitcases. Conductor comes around and starts beating him mercilessly on his legs. And he turns to him and he says, "Why are you hitting me?" The conductor turns to him and says, "Why are you hiding?" "Why am I hiding? Because everybody's hiding. Isn't that what we're all supposed to do? Somebody made an announcement, we should go hide." "Somebody said you should go hide? Why are you hiding? You must not have a ticket. Let me see." He says, "Of course I have a ticket." "You have a ticket and you're hiding? The people who hide are the people who don't have tickets. They didn't pay." He shows him his ticket. And this conductor is aghast. He can't believe it. "You don't just have a ticket. You have a first class ticket. Why are you sitting here in the back of the train with the chickens and the cargo rolling in the mud when you have a first class ticket? Do you know what first class ticket entitles you to? You go to the front of the train and we serve you and you have a bed to lie down in and any food you like we will bring to you and there are waiters and waitresses walking in and out and giving you anything in the world that you can ask for. And you're here in the back with the chickens rolling in the mud with suitcases on top of yourself when you're holding a first class ticket." Said the Dubna Magid, "The Jewish people have paid a very heavy price for their ticket at being the Am HaNivchar. We have paid 3,000 years of Jewish history and too many lives and too many destroyed communities. And too many experiences of upheaval. But we hold a first class ticket." And the Ribono Shel Olam turns to all of us and he asks, "When you hold a first class ticket, you choose to sit with the chickens, to roll in the mud, and throw suitcases on top of yourself? You're going to get caught up in American society and think this is the ideal? You're going to get caught up with the ideology of your time and think this is the best way to live life? Yeah, this is the way most other people are living life, but it's not for you. You hold a first class ticket. You're better than that. You have more to look forward to. You have something much greater in your life that should be driving you, that should be informing every decision of your life. And you're choosing to sit in the back of the train with the chickens and the mud and with suitcases toppling on top of you. Take advantage this Hanukkah and realize how blessed we are to be the Am HaNivchar. How lucky we are to be the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has singled out. It is not our enemies who singled us out, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu who lovingly singled us out and wants so much from us and for us. And when we think about a geula, when we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bayamim Ahem Azman Azeh, we look forward to that time when we'll once again have that perspective and have that understanding of how blessed and how lucky we are to be the people who have stuck it out for 3,000 years with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll finally gain that understanding as to why it is the greatest privilege in history to be the people who we are and to hold on to that chevel, to hold on to that chevle Mashiach, to hold on to our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to see the end, and to understand that Bayamim Ahem, Azman Hazeh, the same way there were miracles back in the days of the Chashmonaim, and ever since then, we look forward. Ki Meitzeischa Mitzrayim, Arenu Niflos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should show us and shower us with His love, and show us His miracles, and we should have so much to be grateful for. Mirtz Hashem.